the VCA Voice podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Marie Curl. Our goal with the VCA Voice is to showcase how VCA Animal Hospitals is taking care of the future of veterinary medicine. We'll bring our purpose to life through meaningful conversations about care, our culture, and the communities we serve. On today's episode, I'm happy to welcome Antonia Latouris, who is a registered veterinary technician. She's also a veterinary technician specialist in anesthesia and analgesia and the director for veterinary technician learning and development with VCA Canada. Welcome, Tony. It's great to have you join.
Thank you, Dr. Curl. I'm really happy to be here. It's always a pleasure to be chatting with you.
Can you share with me your journey in veterinary medicine, like where you started and kind of some of the major highlights of that, and then your time with VCA as well?
Absolutely. So I actually got into veterinary medicine almost by accident. I took a little bit of time off after high school to figure out a little bit of life stuff, you know, as you do. And I figured it was time to get back to school. So I was perusing college curriculums and I stumbled across the vet tech program. I didn't actually know what a vet tech was, but I figured, you know, I love animals, and growing up, I always knew I wanted to work with animals in some capacity. I liked science, I liked math, and so I decided to jump right in. I also thought with this I could possibly work at a zoo, and that really appealed to me at the time. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, the first week of school, I thought to myself, what have I done? I was the greenest person in the class. I had no idea what I got myself into. It was very intimidating, but I'm also very stubborn. So I refused to quit and I just dove right in. Getting experience in small animal medicine was likely to be very important for me. So following graduation, I did get a job at a primary care hospital. And I was really fortunate because it was the first of many clinics that were an incredibly positive influence on my career. I had an amazing leadership structure. The veterinarian there valued vet techs and allowed us to work at the top of our licenses. Mm-hmm. And I had a wonderful RBT mentor. So I was really shown the best possible version of the industry in a primary care facility. And I thought, well, I think I'm going to stick with small animal medicine. My aspirations to work at a zoo fizzled. And I did get bored of primary care medicine after a couple of years. And I made the leap to emergency referral medicine and started employment at a private practice where I stepped into a hybrid position. So I worked emergency, I worked critical care, and I worked in the surgery department. It was there that I was introduced to the world of specialty technicians, and I was blown away. These techs were rock stars. They were so good at what they did. They were experts. They worked autonomically. They were valued as part of the medical healthcare team. They worked alongside the clinicians, and they had the skill set and knowledge base that impressed me. And I thought, this is it. This is what I need to do with my career. It was then that I had to make the decision of the area I wanted to specialize in. And I also did begin to like anesthesia. I developed a bit of a passion for it. Uh-huh. So I decided to make a switch and I transferred to a different hospital, another privately owned practice, emergency referral center. And I went full-time into the surgery department and embarked on my journey to specialize in anesthesia and analgesia. It was there that I was introduced to the world of hands-free radiology. Mm-hmm. And it was a game changer for me. It opened my eyes to what we really needed in the industry for job satisfaction and sustainability, because it was just a safer way to practice radiology and obtain those x-rays that those clinicians are asking for. It was really those experiences that I had growing into a specialty technician and learning the ropes of hands-free radiology that prepared me for the role I'm in now. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to join VCA in 2016, and it involved a relocation. I'm originally from Ontario, Canada, and I had always wanted to live in British Columbia, and a job opportunity came up. And I recognize VCA as an organization that had a huge network and a lot of opportunity for growth. I didn't really know what that looked like at the time. I just figured the ceiling has to be higher with such an incredible organization filled with such talent. So I made the move and joined BCA. I stepped into leadership at the time at that hospital and started to learn the skills and techniques to become a strong leader. And it was then I continued to develop those skills. And it was really kind of luck that the position for director opened up last year. And with the support of some really special people around me, I decided to apply for the role. And I did so on the very last day of applications, because I was so torn of what I wanted to do and if this was something that I could even succeed at and it would involve stepping off the floor. And I decided to make the move and step into this position. And I am so happy that I did that. Looking back, I really do think everything I did, all of the people that supported me along my journey prepared me for the current role that I'm in.
And what was your leadership role in your practice?
I was the head technician at that practice, and they were an emergency clinic, and then they introduced specialty departments, so board certified clinicians. So it's kind of small at first. So I was the head technician for the entire practice. It soon evolved into becoming specialty team lead because we were growing and it was too much of a task for one person to take on. So we ended up having an ER lead tech and a specialty team lead, which was then the position that I was in up until the role that I'm currently in now.
Tony, if you can tell me a little bit about your national role that you have now and what things you get to do on an ongoing basis and why you're passionate about it.
My role currently is to support programs and initiatives that are going to help our technicians at BCA Canada grow and develop within their careers. I am also a huge proponent of hands-free radiology, and this is another big initiative that we are really pushing forward throughout the organization and the profession. And so connecting technicians in their regions, at their hospitals, with opportunities for growth and development for their career progression, fostering assistants that want to develop into technicians as well, and really making those connections for them with whatever training and learning opportunities they need in order to succeed. As we grow and develop and I continue on in this role, I really hope that we can continue to create job opportunities for technicians within BCA Canada so that they have more sustainability in the industry and have something to grow into as they become more experienced within their roles.
That's wonderful. I love that you pointed out in one of your early roles that you were really in a hospital where technicians worked at the top of their license and were able to do all of the things that they've been trained to do. I want that experience for all of our technicians across all of our hospitals. And I'm glad that you're supporting that in Canada, as well as the efforts that we're making in the United States. Now, I'm going to pivot just a little bit. And you've mentioned hands-free radiology many times on the call. And given that people may be listening to this podcast that may not be involved in veterinary medicine to the extent that we are, give me an explanation of what hands-free radiology means and why we're focusing on this right now in veterinary medicine.
So hands-free radiology, for anybody who's new to the industry or isn't aware what that terminology means, these techniques are by no means new. This is something that people used to implement in veterinary medicine frequently. And these hands-free techniques are actually commonplace in many countries around the world. But for most of our careers, anybody who's currently in the industry, we have been instructed, trained, and taught to acquire x-rays for the clinicians by holding patients in the x-ray room on the x-ray table, where we are positioned right next to the x-ray machine and the primary beam. So the beam that actually takes the x-ray when you press the button on the x-ray machine. Mm-hmm. And so the hands-free radiology or hands-free techniques is a non-manual form of holding patients or restraining them on the table without having to be exposed or in the room with them. We do this with various pieces of equipment, and these pieces of equipment are there to replace our hands and arms and allow us to step away from the x-ray machine and away from the patient and keep the patient comfortable and secure and in the position required to obtain that x-ray that the clinician is requesting as part of their diagnostic profile.
from a safety issue, we wear lead gowns and thyroid shields and gloves and glasses and a variety of items to protect us from radiation. Aren't those enough?
Well, they help to reduce the amount of exposure that we are experiencing when we're in the X-ray suite. They are not completely covering our bodies. So there are still areas of the body that are exposed. And that is enough to perpetuate health issues within associates that are being exposed to that radiation. Those pieces of equipment are not intended to be right next or in that primary beam. They're only appropriate for protection from scatter radiation, which is like these invisible X-ray particles that bounce off the patient and around the room that go in every single direction. And so some of those pieces of equipment are only suitable to protect the front of the body. And that scatter can actually bounce off walls and onto other parts of the body that aren't covered by those protective pieces of equipment.
Oh, so what you're saying is having held patients with lead gloves on, in some cases, it's almost impossible. So I may or may not have been guilty myself of putting gloves over my hands to be able to hold the patient. So what you're telling me is that is a really bad practice to do.
Dr. Krill, full transparency, I did the same thing. Nobody can hold anything with those gloves on. They're so cumbersome. And especially when you have a tiny, squirmy little patient or a cat, anybody who works in the industry know that cats are basically liquid and can get in and out of everything. So those gloves, there's no way you're holding a squirmy little liquid cat leg. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, we've all done it. We've all held the limb, tented the glove over our hand, and that actually causes more exposure to scatter because those scatter particles can bounce off the table and then off the glove and bounce back and forth and be exposing our hand more times than not to that scatter radiation. So absolutely not good practice to have those tented over our hands or again in the primary beam because they are not intended to protect us from that primary beam. They're only there to protect us from scatter. These pieces of equipment also need to fit appropriately. Mm-hmm. And there's also a lot of maintenance that needs to occur with them. And so there can be little bits of damage or micro cracks we can't see with the naked eye. Mm-hmm. Unless you're checking these pieces of equipment regularly, you still may be exposing yourself to that scatter radiation that can seep through these little cracks in the protective equipment that we should be wearing.
Tell me about the pet's experience with radiographs, with manual restraint techniques, and why is it scary for them, or why can't we just tell them to stay still, like my doctor would tell me if they put me in front of an X-ray machine?
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful if they would just lay there and hold their arm out so we can obtain that radiograph without any sort of a squirming? You know, being in the veterinary clinic, it's an unusual environment for any patient. It smells funny. It's noisy. It's a scary place. And then in conjunction to that, there's something wrong with the pet. They're not feeling well. Something might be painful. It's a stressful environment to bring a pet into. And then we take them into a small room away from their owner and ask them to be positioned on a table, sometimes in weird positions because we have to have a limb or have them laying in a position that might not be comfortable for them to get that proper radiograph so the clinician can see that anatomy and make their diagnosis. So it's a very stressful experience. And I think it's important to recognize that with our patients. It's really easy to take them in there and just think they should tolerate us positioning them in whatever position we want them to be in, but it's scary for them. So we have to really slow down and try to take steps to reduce the stress that they're experiencing during the X-ray or the diagnostic. When you're manually restraining them, it's our default to get things done quickly and we're task oriented. So we may not be taking how they're feeling into consideration. One of the primary objectives for hands-free is patient comfort. They have to be comfortable on the table to tolerate positioning with these non-manual techniques and the positioning devices. So patient comfort and stress reduction is one of the primary objectives with hands-free radiology. And sometimes we have to incorporate sedation for that or other anxiety-reducing agents that are only to that patient's benefit. And there's a huge movement for fear reduction within the veterinary industry. We want to really make the veterinary clinic a less scary place for these patients. And hands-free radiology embraces that and promotes that for our patients, and even makes those diagnostics much more high quality when we can obtain them in a manner which is much less stressful for the patients.
Yeah, and the other benefit that I see with it is that if we can get them positioned the correct way the first time we shoot that image, then we're actually shooting fewer images, which also reduces radiation exposure.
Absolutely.
So is it safe to sedate patients, and do all of them need that?
Absolutely not. So not every patient is going to require sedation, particularly if they're unwell and they're quiet or have reduced energy levels because of their sickness. There are a lot of really good dogs and cats out there that are responsive to the right approach and will tolerate these positions without sedation if they're made comfortable and feel secure on the table, and you use your positioning devices and techniques to achieve that. There is the need for sedation for certain orthopedic views. I highly believe in that. In addition to pain control, if we're taking an orthopedic view, there's probably something that's uncomfortable in that extremity. And so pain control is absolutely warranted. And there might be the need for some light sedation, because for certain orthopedic views, there is some abnormal positioning in order to get that limb straight or that joint in the correct position so the clinician can assess it through the radiograph. It can be a really mild sedation, and sometimes it's just a matter of the agents that reduce anxiety. I often say, you know, it's not a heavy sedation. It's not a general anesthetic. It's like a glass or two of wine. You know, you had Fluffy's going to come into the clinic, have a glass or two of wine just to take the edge off. Fluffy's not going to be able to drive home on his own. You're going to definitely need a designated driver. However, it's not a heavy sedation, just like a glass or two of wine. So that analogy can be really useful when you're trying to explain to owners the need for sedation, in addition to the fact that it's really going to reduce their pet's stress level if we can give them something mild. Owners want their pets to have a good experience. They don't want them to be stressed out in the veterinary clinic. And so this is another benefit for owners as well as pets going through these diagnostics.
Now, Tony, you've been involved in teaching teams hands-free techniques for some time now. Tell me about that process of learning. Let's say you're in a hospital that's always done manual restraint. What's the learning curve? How long does it take people to get really proficient at the techniques that this requires?
You know, the techniques are really the easy part of it. It's the change management at the hospital.
Yes.
That, you know, we're human. We don't like change. We just like to continue to do things the way we always have. But without change, we can't evolve and we can't improve upon things. And so practices that are embarking on their journey towards becoming hands-free, everybody has to be on board, from leadership, the doctors, technicians, and the assistants. Everybody has to become a safety officer and hold each other accountable to obtaining those x-rays hands-free. We have to understand that this is a new skill for people. So be patient with yourself and be patient with your patients. Anyone who works in the industry knows that our patients are little energy beacons. They will call us out if we are nervous. They will see right through us. You cannot fool them. And so they know that we're a little nervous practicing these techniques. So be patient with that and start with your easy cases. Start with good patients. The learning curve is very quick. Once you get good at the positions and you understand the steps needed for every position, just like if I'm going to put an IV catheter in, I have steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, same things for each single position. Take measures to reduce your exposure at the beginning by practicing the principles of ALARA, which is an acronym for as low as reasonably achievable, meaning reduce your exposure levels however you can. You can do this by distancing yourself from the beam. So when you're practicing, if you're nervous to get out of the room, you can position that patient, gown up, and distance yourself from the beam. And because you have your protective equipment on and you have distanced yourself, you are really reducing your exposure. And that's a win. Rotate radiology duties if you need to. If somebody has to be in the room and you have a partner on shift, switch them up so that you're not always expecting the same person to be in the x-ray suite. I also say to practices that you have the tools in your toolkit already to assess a patient, look at the diagnostic we need to obtain, and then make a plan in case that patient needs sedation or pain control. Plan it for your day. It is no longer a quick one and done procedure. It's going to be planned and scheduled in the day. If it's elective, come back the next day for that x-ray and get some anti-anxiety medications on board. And leverage your associates to their capabilities. Anybody at the hospital can learn these techniques as well. So when everybody in the clinic has an awareness and has a training to obtain x-rays with non-manual restraint techniques, it becomes much easier because anyone in the practice can then obtain those x-rays and everybody is on board with doing things hands-free.
What's the role of the veterinarian to making hands-free radiology successful as it's being introduced and brought into a practice?
Yes, the role of the veterinarian is going to be client education. The vets are the ones discussing treatment plans and recommending diagnostics to owners, and they have to be comfortable and confident when discussing the policy surrounding hands-free radiology and why it is in place in the practice. That is, it is there to protect our associates and the employees taking those diagnostics or those x-rays because it is not safe for them to be exposing themselves to radiation. So they have to have that discussion as to why these x-rays are going to be taken hands-free, as well as the possible need for sedation and pain control to then obtain that diagnostic. And when I say we have these tools in our toolkit, those conversations already occur for various other procedures that happen at the hospital. Veterinarians already have the skills to have that conversation with owners. So they are that educational piece that will really bridge that gap so owners understand and support having hands-free as the method of obtaining those diagnostics.
Yeah, I agree. That's very important. Honestly, I don't know that owners necessarily understand the current method of doing radiographs and, you know, to be able to object to radiographs being done hands-free. But it's safer for our staff and our people. It's also safer and more comfortable for our patients. So I think that it's a tremendous value all the way around. Now, tell me a little bit about introducing these techniques in a general practice hospital where the work and the type of radiographs is a little bit more consistent. Well, what about a large 24-hour specialty ER hospital? Isn't that a lot more complex? What's your approach there?
It seemingly appears that way at first, absolutely, because it is an emergency room and things are happening all the time. Emergency cases are coming in. These hospitals, just like our primary care facilities, absolutely have the knowledge base and the tools in their toolkit to have these procedures done non-manually. So often patients are being sedated for procedures. So the associates are very comfortable sedating and monitoring those patients. So they already have that skill set and that capability. Facilities that are 24/7 often have an overlap when there are shift changes. So planning for these procedures, having owners leave their pets there for a few hours so that we can prep for the diagnostics. That's a really important key for these hospitals. Now, granted, there are some emergencies that come in that x-rays do need to occur in a timely manner. Hopefully, with some of these specific emergencies, there is some type of sedation or pain control offered to them immediately upon presentation. And those then, I always instruct, would be the cases that you are going to try to implement those techniques to reduce your exposure levels whenever possible. Because there is a handful of times, I will admit, over the years, probably in 10 years, about 5 times I've had to gown up. But we've always made sure to take turns, use those positioning devices as often as we can, gown up and step away from the beam if you do have to be in the room. For the rest of the cases, it is something that we can plan for, just like those other procedures where we do have to plan for the procedure, give appropriate sedation, monitor the patient, give pain control if warranted.
Well, we're coming to a close on our time together, and I've really appreciated your remarks and comments. Is there anything in closing that you would share with a team that is considering hands-free or is resistant to jumping into that technique?
I see this being the way of the future for the industry. If we are going to be sustainable and progressive for the future of veterinary medicine, this is the direction that the industry is taking. If we just step back for a moment, I know there is perceived challenges for how we operate in the day and how we schedule things. And when you involve sedation, there becomes concerns with that. You know, we might require additional training for associates or a little bit of time put in for developing these skills. But we just take a step back and think, you know, we talk about the health and safety of people, that we have the ability to make these changes, there should be no reason that goes above the health and safety of an individual. And so we can implement this change to do better. So why would we not take those opportunities to implement that within those practices and make a big difference? And so I think dive in, commit to it, and give it a try, and you will not look back. It is absolutely going to have positive impacts on your practice.
That's a great closing remark, and I am 100% on board. I think that this is a great program. I'm really happy with NVCA that we're strongly supporting this and that this is going to our other Mars Veterinary Health business units as well. And I agree. I want to move the industry forward and want to make sure that we're providing the safest workplaces possible that we can for all of our associates. So, Tony, thank you so very much. It's been a pleasure to speak with you, and I know that our audience is going to get a lot out of what you had to say.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing. Don't forget to leave a review to let us know your thoughts and share the episode with friends. Follow VCA Animal Hospitals on social media at LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. For more inspiring stories, visit our website at vcavoice.com.